Chapter 12.
This is very fine,
Bukov commented as he pulled his glass away from his lips and looked at the amber-colored liquid. It's called bourbon, I replied, as I enjoyed the smooth aftertaste of what was easily the most expensive booze I'd ever had.
It is quite strong.
Fika giggled, and she delicately placed a hand over her lips as her cheeks flushed a little. If you think that's strong. I grinned as I took another sip of the bourbon. I'll have to bring you all some moonshine next time.
Moonshine?
Vilvi said in a whimsical tone.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds magical somehow. Like a legendary potion of some kind.
It's something like that, I chuckled. Nimthok came back just then, and was clean enough for his mother's approval, so we all finished eating and drinking together, and my friends and I recounted stories of previous triumphs, and the only thing missing was Ipsif. But I would make things safe for her down here soon enough, and there would be many more nights like this. Once we'd finished eating, Bukov handed his son the Lego set that I'd bought.
This is from Brother Eddie,
the red-haired man said as the boy took the colorful box and looked at it.
This is beautiful.
Nemi gasped as he ran his fingers over the picture on the front.
I can't even see the brush strokes. Thank you, Brother Eddie.
The box isn't the present. I snorted as I tried not to laugh. It's the toys inside the box.
Toys?
The excitable little boy practically leapt up on his feet with excitement. I got up and moved around the table, so I could sit on the floor next to Nimthok. Then Bukoth watched with interest as I opened up the packaging, pulled out the bright blocks, and showed the red-haired boy the instructions. All you have to do is follow the steps in the picture, and you can make the castle, I explained. Then Nimi and I started to sort out all the different pieces, as Fika and Vilvi began to clean up the dinner mess. Both of the Night Elf women smiled warmly at how happy the little boy was, and I got the sense they both loved the little guy, even if only one of them was his natural mother. Soon Bukoth joined us, and the three of us carefully followed the instructions. I kind of found the whole thing funny in a way. It was just like my memories of building Lego sets with my dad, but with two elves in an underground world that was filled with magic and monsters. Nilame, Amrila, and Scourge all watched us build the little castle as they sipped their bourbon and chatted. It took a while, and Nimi's enthusiasm for the task set us back more than once, but we soon had the whole set put together, and the little boy carefully placed the Lego knight on the battlements to defend against the dragon's attack. I was glad Nimthok liked the gift so much, and my heart warmed as I watched him play with it. We should probably talk about our plans, I said to the group. How exactly do we plan to do this? It sounds like Igurg has a small army at his disposal, so we're going to have to be really smart about how we approach this.
I think I can help with that,
Nilame said with a small smile. Then the muscular warrior woman stood and led me out of the tent while the others followed. Sitting around outside were seven Dolrath warriors, who all got to their feet when the princess and general came out of the tent. I recognized a couple of faces from the time I'd spent in the encampment, but the only one I knew by name was Ezreal. The swordsman had fought the shadow demon and its horde with me, and I remembered him being one hell of a warrior.
Shield brother?
Nilame said in a formal tone that reminded me of her mother's commanding presence.
These are your archers, Chatteron and Therias.
The dark-haired woman indicated two of the soldiers. Chatteron was a slim man with a completely shaven head, and Therias was a slight woman with dark red hair held back in tight braids. Wait, I frowned in confusion. My archers?
Yes, shield brother.
A big Dolrath man with a huge polearm strapped to his back said,
The chief has given us permission to go with you to fight in the Kharadu territory.
The big man had bright red hair shaved on the sides and pulled back out of his face, and something about him was vaguely familiar. Have we met before? I asked as I tried to place his face.
No, brother,
the big man said.
But you did fight with my brother, Urlak, against the Shadow Demon. My name is Erelor, and it is an honor to serve under your command.
That was a lot to take in at once. I remembered Urlak. The polearm master had also been big as hell, but he died in the fight against the demon. I also needed to process that these warriors were apparently under my command. Not Nilame or Bakoth's command, but mine. That felt weird. I remember your brother, I said to Erelor. He was very brave, and it took a whole swarm of monsters to take him down. I'm glad to have you with us. The big man smiled at me and inclined his head.
This is Cannel.
Nyla May continued on as she introduced me to the soldiers.
He's a dual wielder like Amrila, and I'm sure you remember Azriel.
I do remember. I smiled at the warrior. Good to see you again. Cannel was a man of medium build and had a short, white mohawk. He didn't look like much, but I'm sure he was more than capable if Nyla May had brought him along. Azriel looked almost exactly the same as when I'd met him before, with short silver hair and broad shoulders from swinging the greatsword on his back. But since I'd last seen him, he'd gotten a tattoo on the side of his neck that depicted a stylized version of one of the large carrion beetles the Dolrath used to make their armor.
Finally, this is Feistren,
the princess concluded.
And Cyneith, your scouts.
The last two women nodded toward me. Feistren was a formidable figure, with cut arms, jet-black hair shaved on one side, and a long scar that ran from her left temple and across the bridge of her nose. Cyneith was almost the opposite, with a flowing white mohawk, a trim figure, and a small silver ring through her septum. I wasn't sure how I was going to keep all their names straight, but I was happy to have the extra help. It wasn't a large force, but between all these fierce warriors and the advantage of multiple firearms, I was sure we could hold our own against Igurg's forces, as long as we thought things through. It had always worked out before. All right, I said to my soldiers and friends as I tried to sound authoritative. Let's gather what we need and meet on the outskirts of the town in half an hour. We'll march to the spike growth and camp outside the village of Grimthorn. I want everyone to be well-rested before we enter the Twilight region, so we'll only have to camp once while we're in the twilight.
An excellent plan.
Bakarth nodded. Oh, I almost forgot, I said, and I fished out more gifts out of my backpack as the soldiers left to handle their last-minute business. I got this for your new baby, Bakarth. I handed the redhead general the stuffed griffin, and he looked at the plush toy with a serious expression.
It's so soft.
The mohawked man chuckled as he ran his hand over the eagle-like head of the toy.
Thank you, Eddie. I'm sure Vilevi will be delighted.
And I got these for you, Scourge. I grinned as I handed the gray gentleman the boxes of tea I'd brought for him.
How you spoil me, friend.
The dark-skinned man smiled as he opened one of the boxes and breathed in its aroma.
Oh my, such a strange, dark fragrance. What is this called?
Constant Comet, I replied as I read the side of the box. It smells like a mix of fruit and spices to me.
A princely gift, to be sure,
Scourge said as he placed the boxes in his pack. After a quick stop at the market to make sure we had enough rations for the trip, the five of us went to the edge of the Tent City to meet with the soldiers and make our way down to Grimthorn. The journey through the Dolrath lands was relatively easy since our group was large enough to deter any of the beasts of the gloom from attacking us, and we arrived in the gnome village after a few hours' march. I made sure to stop far enough outside the town that the soldiers wouldn't have to observe the strict sound ordinance of Grimthorn. I wanted them to be able to relax, and this was a good chance to get to know the men and women I was about to lead into battle. We set up camp on a rise that allowed us to see all around us, and I could see Grimthorn about 400 yards away. Because we were in a cave, we would have to keep our voices down so the echoes wouldn't disturb the village, but we would be able to talk freely. As the soldiers made themselves a simple stew and passed a hunk of bread around, they chatted and joked with one another, and I couldn't help but smile at their camaraderie. My friends and I were still full from the feast that Fika and Vilevi had made, but I took some of the bread as it was passed around. It felt like good form to eat with the soldiers.
What is your plan, brother?
Chatteron asked as he rubbed the smooth blue-toned skin of his bald scalp. That's a good question, I replied as I leaned back on my elbows next to the campfire. I don't want to get too locked into any one idea, since there's a lot we don't know about Igurg's forces. We can probably assume we'll be outnumbered, though, so we'll have to find a way to get the drop on them and take out as many of his soldiers as we can before it comes down to hand-to-hand combat.
Is diplomacy out of the question?
Scourge asked as he stroked his clean-shaven chin.
You do have quite a reputation, after all. The mere threat of having to fight you might be enough of a deterrent.
I guess that's not out of the question, I said as I thought about that option. But I wouldn't count on it. Murdrak would probably have already tried to reason with the bandit warlord. I think we should stop in Kedaran and try to get a few more details.
That's a very sound idea.
Nyla May nodded.
The more information we have, the better we can prepare.
After I'd set up the watches with Bakarth and Nyla May's help, we all got some rest for the long journey ahead. The Dolrath soldiers all seemed to be fine with taking directions from me. but I noticed they would look to the princess and the Mohawk general for confirmation, even in a small thing like watch rotations. I understood why, though. To them, I was an untested leader. Ezreal seemed the most comfortable taking orders from me, but I still had to prove myself to the others. That was fine, though. I wasn't the kind of asshole who expected respect out of nowhere. Respect was something people had to earn. Still, I really needed to find a way to gain the trust of the soldiers before we went into battle against the orc warlord. So as we broke camp and headed toward the gnome village, I turned the problem over in my head. When we reached the outskirts of Grimthorn, the village elder was already waiting for us, flanked by his faithful guards. The old man bowed to us, and I watched Nylame bow her head in return, so I followed suit. As the ancient gnome with the long beard looked at me, he had a wide grin on his face, and the old man handed a pouch to one of his guards, who walked forward and lifted the little black sack up to me. I was a little confused, but I took the bag and bowed to show my thanks. I would have liked to ask some questions, but the gnome's prohibition of speech made that impossible. Then I looked inside the bag and saw what looked like dried peppers or bean pods of some kind. They smelled savory, and I kind of wanted to try one, but I thought it was probably better to wait and ask Bakoth or Nylame what they were first. But the look the old gnome gave me was strange. There was a knowing smile on his face that made me feel a little uncomfortable. The general was right. These gnomes were very creepy. Our group was led to the spike growth, and we watched as the gnomes performed the ritual to open the way to the twilight region. The grunting chants of the small soldiers only added to my vague feeling of discomfort, and I was glad when the vines finally opened and we were able to go through into the viney maze beyond. As I passed the gnomish elder, he smiled at me again, but he looked tired and depleted after the ritual. The trail mix I'd given him a few days ago must have helped, though, because he looked way better than he had the first time we'd been through. Then I walked through the spiked archway and moved at the head of the group toward the twilight. We walked through the maze, and I noted the goblin skeleton was still there, wrapped in the thick vines. On an impulse, I reached out and rubbed the skull for good luck as I passed it. I wasn't even sure why, but it felt right, and I noticed a couple of the soldiers behind me did the same. Eventually, after some time in the tunnels, we finally found ourselves in the twilight. The strange purple light that came from the crystals in the walls and ceiling made it hard to see. But Feistrin and Aralor had two of the lanterns that the Dolrath used the last time we were in the twilight. I looked around at the stark landscape and thought about going through the basilisk swamp. Amrila, you and Scourge are probably the most familiar with the twilight, I said as I looked at the two Zinkari. Which way do you think is best? The horned woman and the dark-skinned man looked at one another for a moment.
If we take the path over there northward, it will lead to a swamp, Scourge suggested. Maybe not the safest way, but if we stay on the path, it should be fine.
Yeah, I grinned as I looked in the direction the Zinkari man had pointed. That's the way we went last time. There may be a big-ass basilisk corpse stinking up the place, assuming it hasn't been picked clean by scavengers yet.
That would take quite a lot of scavengers,
the goth snorted.
You killed a basilisk?
Scourge blinked at me.
Yes, he did.
Amrila smiled with hooded eyes as she looked at me.
My husband shot it dead.
I had help, I said modestly as I looked at the Dolrath soldiers around me. I can't take sole credit. But what about a way that isn't necessarily the safest? I'm not trying to fight another basilisk, but it might be a good idea for us to maybe get into a little trouble.
I like trouble.
Mamrila chimed in, and my wife looked even more turned on now.
What did you have in mind?
Scourge asked as he rolled his eyes at Amrila's obvious enthusiasm. Maybe it'd be good for us to fight something as a group. I shrugged. I think it would help us to get an idea of how we work together as a unit before the stakes are really high.
That's very clever.
Nylame agreed in her mild voice.
A little routine exercise to build up the soldiers' confidence and get them to work together.
If we go east for a while before we cut north, there might be some goblins.
Scourge said as he looked at my Zinkari wife for her approval.
A smallish band of goblins would be a good challenge without posing too much danger.
Amrila nodded.
That might be perfect.
Great. I grinned. Let's do that. Lead the way.
Maybe we could go past the old tower ruins.
Amrila mused as she looked at the dark-skinned man.
I've seen some goblins skulking around there, but there's not enough of the old building left for them to build up a sizable force.
That could work. Scourge nodded. But we should send a scout ahead, Goblins can be industrious sometimes, and they might have tried to build on the existing foundations and set up a new town.
Amrila, do you want to scout ahead with Cyneath? I asked. Scourge can lead us close to this ruin while we wait to hear back from you ladies.
Of course, partner.
The red-skinned woman grinned. I watched as Amrila left up the road with the lithe Dolrath scout, and then Scourge took point and led us through the strange landscape of the twilight. As we went up the road and further into the twilight, the cavern started to open up, and the sinister-looking trees began to grow taller. The area wasn't like the swamp we trekked through last time, but the air had the same cool dampness to it. The ground was dry, and the company moved forward at an easy pace, but there was a tension in the humid air, and the soldiers barely spoke as we kept our eyes peeled for any signs of the ruins.
You know, Bekoth said in a quiet voice with a small smirk on his face, I understand that the Tektris Forest isn't far from here.
I think you know I'm not actually the king there, right? I snorted as I also kept my voice low.
And I'm sure you know I never believed you were a goblin.
The general replied with a friendly smile. Then why did you keep it up for so long? I asked as I raised one curious eyebrow.
Whatever you are,
the Mohawked warrior said in a philosophical tone,
it's your business, and you'll tell the rest of us when you're ready.
But we will still take bets about what you are behind your back.
Scourge chimed in.
I have 100 gold on a gnome cursed with gigantism after you scorned a bog hag.
Really? I chuckled and wasn't sure if the Zinkari man was serious.
I have just as much on you being a rebellious demon who has somehow escaped the Deeper Dark,
Bekoth added. Maybe after running afoul of some infernal demon lord when you refused to torture some poor creature. That's very elaborate, Bekoth, I said with an amused grin.
Why did no one let me bet?
Nilame asked in a mildly offended tone.
Because I suspect you have an unfair advantage.
The general scoffed and flashed the princess a knowing smile.
And we have to keep things fair, after all.
Nilame blushed and gave me a sidelong look, and I felt my own cheeks flush a little. As the four of us did our best to stifle our laughs, the sudden sound of animalistic yelps echoed through the caves, and the company stopped behind me as I paused to listen. One yelp was cut off, but another followed after a second or two. What is that? I hissed to Scourge.
It might be a gur,
Nilame suggested as we heard another yelp.
A what?
I asked as I looked up the road for any signs of Amrila and Cyneath.
It's a small black and silver colored animal with large ears and a bushy tail,
the princess explained.
They're clever, but a bit of a nuisance.
It might also be a young gar,
Scourge said as he listened with his head cocked to one side.
Maybe a pup separated from its mother.
It sounds like there's more than one, whatever it is,
Bekoth commented with a stern look on his face.
And from those yelps, I would guess they're in distress or being tortured.
There were several booming barks then, and my asshole clenched as I wondered where Amrila was.
There's the mother, Scourge said flatly. They're gums for sure, judging by that bark.
The only thing I had to compare that bark to was a large dog or a wolf, but I didn't have time to ask for an explanation of what a garm was. I needed to know where my wife was. Let's move up and find Amrila and Cyneath, I commanded the soldiers. Then I nearly ran down the road, toward the sounds of the animals as far as I could tell with the echoes. The caverns made it almost impossible to tell with certainty where the sound came from, but the yumps seemed to become stronger as the trees started to get thicker on either side of the overgrown path. My heart hammered in my chest, and I started to hear voices, but they sure as shit weren't the Zinkari woman or the Night Elf scout. The voices sounded sibilant and harsh, and I couldn't understand them from so far away. And all I wanted at that moment was to lay eyes on my wife.
Psst!
I heard a hiss to my right, and I looked into the woods to see Amrila and the scout with her silver nose ring as they peeked out from around a tree just off the road. The two stealthy women came up to the rest of the company, and I breathed an inward sigh of relief. I hadn't heard any screams or shouts that would have indicated something was wrong, and Amrila was one of the most capable people I knew, but I still felt better to know beyond a shadow of a doubt she was okay.
What's going on?
I asked in a hushed voice.
Did you all find the ruins?
It's full of goblins, just like Scourge suspected it would be.
Amrila replied, and she wrinkled her nose to show her disgust.
They're a strange breed I haven't seen before, with mottled red and black skin and little horns and bony spikes along their heads and shoulders.
Weird, I said as another yelp tore through the trees around us. Did you see what was making that sound?
No.
Cyneth shook her head.
But we did smell cooking meat. They might be slaughtering animals for food.
Either they're cooking up one hell of a feast, or they're toying with those poor animals before killing them. I said, Scourge, you're the one who knew about the tower. Do you know the layout? The dark-skinned man crouched down as his leather armor creaked, and he started to draw a little map in the dirt. The Zinkari man used a few pebbles and smaller stones to outline the boundary of the outer broken wall. And once he was done, he looked up at Amrila and the Elven Scout.
You would have approached the ruins from the south right here, he said as he pointed to what looked like a main entrance to the tower. How many of the little buggers did you see?
There were four guarding the shallow steps that led into what's left of the stump of the tower,
Amrila said as she drew four small circles with her finger.
And there were three more wandering here between the tower and a bit of crumbling wall here. But it sounded like there were more in the tower base than we couldn't see.
The horned woman drew three more circles on the west side of the entrance. All right. I nodded as my mind quickly started to work out the problem in front of me. We're not sure exactly how many there are, so that leaves two questions. How many of them could reasonably be in the ruin? And what are they armed with?
The guards at the front carried short swords that looked as if they were in some disrepair.
Cyneth replied as she folded her arms and looked down at the crude map.
And two of the ones by the wall had bows and arrows, but they're small creatures, and I doubt their bows have much of a reach.
I looked down at the rough map, and the broken wall encircled most of the tower. But Scourge had drawn several large gaps in the wall of the tower itself, where the stones had crumbled away, and it looked as though someone could walk right through. Here's what I'm thinking, I said finally. We split into two groups. Nyleme leads one, and I'll lead the other. We'll come up to the front of the tower and use the rifles first to thin out the goblins' numbers. Then the archers will cover the front door while the two teams go around either side of the towers and pick off any goblins we see. When we have either side of the tower surrounded, we'll move in through the gaps in the walls and finish off any goblins left in the tower.
I like it.
Bakoth grinned as he nodded in approval. Amrila, you and Cyneth will lead us to the tower, I said as I grabbed my Galil and checked that there was a round in the chamber. We'll all be as quiet as we can and try to get the drop on them. The soldiers and my friends all nodded as they readied themselves. It still felt weird, the way the others looked to me to come up with a plan or take charge. I'd never thought of myself as a leader, I guess. But as long as I didn't let it go to my head, I felt confident in my choices. Nyleme and Bakoth were professional soldiers, so if they trusted me, I must have some kind of knack for it. And I knew I could trust Amrila and Scourge to tell me the truth if they thought anything I said was dumb or out of line. The company moved along the path through the woods on nearly silent feet. I was actually surprised how quietly they could move. Most of my life I'd been in or around the woods, and I wasn't able to slink through the forest that quietly. But after I watched them for a few moments, I started to pick up on how they moved, and I adjusted my own movements to match until I was ghosting along the path with equal stealth. Then Amrila and the scout stopped, and I saw the horned woman point north through some trees. I came up beside my wife and peeked through the branches at the rubble-strewn ruins of a marble tower. Nyleme padded up next to me and also looked at the four goblins that lazily lounged on the steps. They really were ugly little fuckers. It was hard to tell from a distance, but they looked to be about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. Little bone-colored horns grew in lines along their bold heads, the backs of their necks, and along the tops of their gaunt shoulders. The armor they had on looked like a patchwork of leather pieces they'd found, and I could see little patches of rust on the swords that hung on their belts from here. This doesn't look like a fair fight, I whispered as I looked at the pathetic creatures on the tower steps. I wouldn't feel too bad, Scourge replied quietly next to me. I almost jumped out of my skin. The dark-skinned thief had snuck up behind me so quietly I'd no idea he was there.
They're scavengers, he continued, and cannibals when the need facilitates it. Look at their armor. See those patches of reddish-black leather? That's where they've skinned one of their fallen, and likely ate them after.
I looked back at the beady-eyed monsters at the base of the fallen tower, and I watched as two goblins by the wall viciously fought over something one had found on the ground, while the third just stared and laughed. Then there was the sound of a fierce bark that quickly turned into another yelp. A moment later, mean, almost childlike laughter erupted from inside the stump of the tower, and the sound of it chilled my blood.
What the fuck are they doing in there? I wondered out loud before I turned to Nilame. Are you ready?
I await your command.
The princess replied with a mysterious smile. Her AK was already in her hands, and the barrel was pointed at the ground. I smiled back at the dark-haired woman and put my Pro-X headphones over my ears. Nilame and Amrila did the same, and Scourge, Bakoth, and the soldiers pulled the bright-colored earplugs out of their pockets. Once I was sure everyone had their ear protection in place, I lifted my hand in the air and then motioned forward. Nilame and I started forward at a sprint, and a battle cry sounded behind us from the soldiers. As we broke through the tree line, I saw the four guard goblins jump to their feet, and they started to shout, growl, and chitter at one another. Just as two other goblins came out of the tower to see what the commotion was, I opened fire and quickly took out three of the goblins on the steps. As the three remaining goblins darted back through the archway to the relative safety of the tower, Nilame racked her AK and shot at the little fuckers near the wall. The goblins who'd been fighting had stopped to hold their ears after the loud-as-fuck blast of the Galil, and because they'd been stunned by the ringing in their ears, the Dolrath princess easily picked them off one by one.
Forward!
I shouted so the soldiers could hear me through their earplugs, and I motioned again with my hand. I ran to the left, and Nilame went right, but I glanced back once to make sure the archers posted up to pick off any goblins who tried to run out of the main archway. Both Chatteron and Therias stopped about 20 feet from the bottom of the steps, kneeled, and each knocked an arrow to their bowstring. Behind me, I also saw Cannel, Feistrin, Amrila, and Scourge as I ran between the towers and the busted-up wall. Half a dozen goblins began to stream out of holes and gaps in the tower wall. Some tried to run for the forest, while others ran right toward us with rust-pitted short swords and spears. I focused my attention on the ones that tried to flee into the woods, while the others started to engage the fugly goblins in physical combat. Amrila had both her swords out and made quick work of two of the small monsters who tried to push her back with their spears. In one smooth motion, the horned woman cut the sharpened end off one of the goblin's spears, while she knocked the other spear out of her way and darted in to impale one spiky bastard. Then she twisted around and sliced the head off the other goblin, and it flew several feet and then bounced 3 times on the blue-colored grass before it rolled into some bushes. Then, even more of the disgusting fucker started to pour out through the ruined walls of the tower, and we were surrounded. It was hard to get a count on them, since more streamed out of the gaps in the stone wall as my companions and I continued to dispatch them left and right, so I clicked on the laser on my rifle and flashed on the light to blind a few of the diseased-looking goblins. I had to be careful with the flashlight, though, because I didn't want to blind any of my friends. As the light hit several goblins, they shrieked and put their hands over their eyes. They rapidly blinked their eyes as if to clear away the spots that now floated before their eyes, and before they could recover, I trained my laser on each of them and pulled the trigger 3 times. Each of the blinded goblins flew back as the force of the bullets hit them, and I moved forward through the gap that Feistrin cleared for me with her halberd-like weapon. Then I saw a hole in the tower wall where the large marble blocks made a crude set of steps that would get me up onto the top of the broken wall, so I quickly scrambled up it and looked down inside the tower for the first time. There were still about 20 of the mottled-skinned goblins in the tower who scrambled around with their weapons drawn as they tried to find a safe path out of the tower. My company of warriors had surrounded the tower base, though, and neatly trapped the panicking bastards inside. There was the sound of fighting all around the tower, and the ones left inside had no way out unless they tried to push through our line. Then I looked in the center of the large, central chamber, and my stomach clenched as a feeling of revulsion swept over me. There were several dead, white, furry animals there in the center of the room. Some of them had clearly been pulled apart, limb by limb, but others bore shallow stab wounds as well. The dog-like creatures had lush white fur, except for the reddish-brown tips of their soft, floppy ears. They looked like some strange distant cousin of a wolfhound, and only 2 of them were still alive. The poor beasts had clearly been tortured to death, and I realized what the barks and yelps had been about. I felt sick inside at the thought of what these beautiful animals had endured at the hands of these savage little pricks. So I lifted my Galil, put the red dot on one of the panicked goblins, and squeezed the trigger. The little horned bastard flew into part of the broken wall as my bullet hit him, and then he crumpled to the ground. Several of the ruddy-colored goblins looked up at me then and started to shout and point, but all of them were half-deaf from the sound of the rifles, so they were mostly ignored. One wielded a bow and shot up at me, though his arrow harmlessly bounced off my dwarven breastplate.
Then I started to fire into the crowd of goblins as more of them turned, and the bastards with bows fired more arrows at me. In their agitated state, most of the goblins missed me completely, but a few did hit the breastplate hidden under my Dolrath-style shirt. Then my soldiers broke through the goblin horde outside and into the tower. So I dropped my mag and slammed in a fresh one. As I did that, a goblin arrow grazed my arm, and I felt a sharp, sudden pain. I looked down and saw the bloody rip in my shirt, and then I turned back to see the goblin archer below me as he started to knock another arrow. I quickly got a bead right in the middle of his wide forehead and pulled the trigger. The top of the fucker's head exploded into mist, and he fell to the ground as his bow and arrow clattered harmlessly onto the flagstones. Then I climbed down the wall as my warriors cleaned up the last few of the mottled-skinned goblins. As my feet hit the marble flagstones, I approached the two dogs that had survived, and one began to growl at me.